Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Michaela. And this is Drink the Movies,
a podcast where each week we try to recreate a classic movie drink and discuss the movie that inspired it.
Thanks for joining us. Now let's drink the movies.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 104 of Drink the Movies. I'm Brian here, as always, with Michaela. And Michaela, we're heading to somewhere we've never been before on the podcast. We've dabbled in this world a little bit. We talked about Fantastic Beasts. We have talked about our trip to Universal Studios, to the Wizarding World, but we've never really gone to Hogwarts and checked in with Ron and Hermione and Harry to see what they've been up to. But today's the day. We are going full-blown into that Wizarding World that is Harry Potter, and I'm very excited about it. Michaela, Harry Potter, pretty exciting stuff, I think.
It is very exciting. This is dedicated to one of my BFFs, will be. He loves and breathes all things Harry Potter. So this is definitely for him. One of the things that I love about
Sorry about the next hour, Wilbur. Sorry.
Yeah, we're going to talk about all the things. But I think one of the things that I'm most looking forward to is our take on the Butterbeer. Because let's be honest, that was a main attraction for a lot of people who went to Harry Potter World. They wanted to get their hands on it. They wanted an alcoholic version. They wanted a non-alcoholic version. We have done our best to recreate that. And really, for the non-alcoholic version, recreate what you would have. But the alcoholic version, we've gone off the rails. We went in our own way. And I think it's we did a really good thing making our own adult classic version of the Butterbeer. So sit back, relax, everybody. Buckle in. We're only talking about Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. We're not talking about all of them. You're going to have to wait. But I do feel like this is the new classic for this generation of like holiday films. You know, there's those films that are always put out like the week of Thanksgiving. And I feel like the Harry Potter series is really replacing like Wizard of Oz and Sound of Music. Fortunately, unfortunately, it's kind of a thing now, I think, right?
Yeah, it definitely is a thing. It's easily accessible on the streaming services, which is where I retuned it back into it. But yeah, you know, we have a lot of talking to do about Harry Potter. But before we do that, we're going to need a drink. Like you said, Michaela, Butterbeer is on the menu. So why don't we take a quick break and we will be right back to mix up this week's two-part libation. One non-alcoholic, one alcoholic. So let's take a break. We will be right back.
So our non-alcoholic version of the Butterbeer comes from Delish.com. It is quite delish, and this is very reminiscent, to me at least, of what you can expect if you go to Harry Potter World and you ask for a cold Butterbeer. Not the frozen Butterbeer, but just the regular one that is served to you kind of just chilled. Okay?
Yeah, for sure. Spoiler warning, if you do go to Universal and you get the Butterbeer, it's sweet. This one, also pretty sweet. But yeah, it tastes pretty similar. It's right in that same kind of vein as what you get there at the Wizarding World. But, you know, Michaela, a lot of people get their invite to go to Hogwarts. They go to King's Cross Station. They go to Platform 9 3/4, and they're going. And that's what we're doing, but we're not going to go to Hogwarts. We're going for the Butterbeer. So why don't we start with this non-alcoholic one for Delish. I'll let you run through this one. You mixed it up for your kiddo last night when we were getting ready to watch this.
So now this is a giant batch. This is not this is going to make about four drinks, just so everybody knows, but you're going to do four cans of cream soda. You're going to do a fourth of a cup of butterscotch syrup. Now Smucker's makes a butterscotch syrup that will do nicely. You don't have to spend $37 on like some artisan butterscotch thing. Okay. Smucker's will do a quarter cup of that. And then a cup of heavy cream. This is also incredibly fattening. Just so everybody knows, 2 tablespoons of sugar, 2 teaspoons of pure vanilla extract, and a quarter cup of melted butter. Now, before everybody dies of a heart attack or goes into some sort of shock from the sugar, The drink itself is the cream soda and the butterscotch syrup. So what you're going to do is you're just going to take that quarter cup of butterscotch syrup and stir it into the cream soda. Everything else that we've talked about, the heavy cream, the sugar, the vanilla extract, the melted butter, you're going to mix all of that separate. And that is going to make the most amazing, sweet, buttery whipped cream that I've ever had in my entire life. I have to say, it is so good. And in my opinion, it makes the drink, because what you're going to do is you're going to pour yourself a cup of the liquid concoction, and then you're going to dollop as much of that heavy whipped cream on top. And then, of course, you can put more butterscotch syrup on it if you dare. And then you're going to drink it or chew it, whatever. There's so much sugar and fat in it, but it's so good. My son really liked the drink itself. He didn't so much like the whipped cream. And so I took that travesty away from him, and I had the whole whipped cream myself.
Yeah, that butter makes it awfully rich. So if you were making this for a group of youngsters, I would maybe skip that part. Might be a little bit too rich. They want more of the sugar, less of the butter, you know. So maybe that way. But yeah, I mean, it's good. Like we said, it's very akin to that butterbeer that you get at Universal Studios if you go there. And it comes together really simply. You don't have to make the full batch because we just did one. So basically just one can and like a tablespoon roughly of the butterscotch syrup. So you can just kind of mix that up and do whatever you want to do there with the whipped cream. So that is the non-alcoholic version. So go ahead, mix up one of those drinkets, and then you'll be ready to jump into the adult version of this. Now, this recipe, it came from the How to Drink YouTube page, which is really great. We've done some cocktails from them before, including one of my absolute favorite cocktails that we've ever done on the podcast, which was a Miracle Pill for Princess Bride. It was coffee-y and chocolatey and orangey and delicious. Go on to the website, drinkthemovies.com, look up the recipe for that, mix that up, then come back and mix this up. So apparently this recipe is like the classic like butterbeer recipe from like way back in the day. England, Henry VIII was drinking these, I guess. And this was the inspiration for the butterbeer that we get in the book for Harry Potter. And we thought that was interesting because if you look up butterbeer, it's almost always just some sort of riff on like this cream soda and butterscotch flavor, right?
Yeah.
But this really is very different. And it's very warming. It feels like Christmas, as you mentioned, Michaela. You know, Harry Potter is quickly becoming like a Christmas time staple in a lot of families, and this would fit in very nicely. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to put on the stovetop a little pot. You're going to put in 3 pints of ale. We used like a winter welcome ale from England, just, you know, 3 pints of ale. Put in about a teaspoon of ginger, a teaspoon of nutmeg, 5 or 6 cloves. Just put that in there and bring it up to a simmer. Just let it go, let it chill out, hang out warm there for a little bit. And while you're doing that, while that is warming up, you're going to take a bowl. You're going to put 5 egg yolks in there. You're going to put 1 cup of demerara sugar, and you're going to beat that until the eggs and the demerara sugar all come together. It's going to get all nice and kind of ribbony. If you've ever done anything with eggs, you just kind of beat it until it's fallen off. They call it like the ribbon stage, where it's just kind of falling off of your beaters. So you're going to do that, and then you slowly combine the two. You put that hot beer mix into the eggs, just like a ladle at a time, and then you stir it all together. And then you're going to add in 4 ounces of butter, because that wasn't rich enough before. You need butter in your butter beer. That's where it gets its name.
Yep.
So you put the 4 ounces of butter in there, and then you just have this crock of deliciousness. You could probably make this in the crock pot and keep it if you're doing like a holiday party. Good idea. Good to know for us, Michaela. That's what we need in our lives right there. But you ladle it out into a mug and enjoy your time at Hogwarts.
That's right. It's so good. Now, I have to say, I was real skeptical. I was excited about this because I'm not a fan of cream soda. So I really wanted something that was not the non-alcoholic version. I wanted something that was different. This was very different, and it is incredibly delicious. I was very skeptical because it was warm, and I like Glühwein, and that's warm, and I like a warm cider with some bourbon in it around this time when it's cold out. But I don't know, warm beer. This is totally different. It is sweet, but not too sweet. It definitely has really good ginger on the nose. I'm not a huge fan of ginger, so it was just enough to kind of make all the aromatics happen for me. With the butter, you could really kind of taste not the butter, but like the mouthfeel of butter inside, because it's a very creamy taste to it. It was remarkable. Just I'm so excited and I'm so glad that we found this. And thank you for How to Drink for putting this out in the world, because not enough people have seen this version clearly. And so that's why we want to share it with our fan base, because everybody needs to go and try this. It's so good.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. If you want to do kind of a riff on a butterbeer, looking for something different, definitely give this one a try. Or yeah, if you're doing some sort of winter party, you're going to be outside having like a fire or something like that, this would be perfect for it. And it's pretty low ABV still, because it's just the beer in there. So it's not like some crazy, like high proof, concoction that you're putting together. So give one or both of those a try. Take pictures of them. Let us know what you think about them. Tag us, do all that stuff. But Michaela, for now, we need to whip up a quick batch of this, because we are about to miss our train. We need to get to Hogwarts Express. We need to get there, learn some spells, fly some brooms, do all the things. So we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back to talk about this week's film, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Philosopher's Stone. Harry Potter and the Stone. We'll be right back.
Spoiler warning for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. If you've not yet seen this, I don't know what's wrong with you, especially in America, because it's everywhere, and it's everywhere. It's been everywhere every Christmas season for the last 12 years. But if you've not seen this and you don't want to know what happens, you should press pause. You should go fix yourself either an alcoholic or non-alcoholic butterbeer. You should go watch this 2.5 hour film, and then you can come back and we can talk about it. Now, it is worth noting that in America, it's called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Everywhere else in the world, it's the Philosopher's Stone. They are the same film, so you didn't miss one in the eight that were made.
That's right. Yeah, I was going to say, if you've not seen the Sorcerer's Stone, you might have seen the Philosopher's Stone. Apparently, that was some nomenclature tomfoolery from the book publisher here in the United States that thought Americans don't know what philosophers are, but we know what sorcerers are. So I guess that's where the name change came from. So watch either one. It's still the first film in the franchise. Have that one, because it's very important to set up our story as we go forward over the next decade of our youngsters' lives here. So this was released in November of 2001. Directed by Chris Columbus, who's directed a lot of really great things. Home Alone, Mrs. Doubtfire, the first two of these films, all sorts of stuff. Chris Columbus is the man. Stars Daniel Radcliffe as Harry Potter, Emma Watson as Hermione Granger, and Rupert Grint as Ron Weasley. And of course, there's lots of others here that we'll be touching on as we kind of talk about this movie a little bit. So, Michaela, this was based on an increasingly popular book by the same name, The Philosopher's Stone. It was released in 1997, and I think they were onto like the fourth book by the time this came out. So this was coming out. It was guaranteed to make a boatload of money. It made a boatload of money. But no one really knew, I guess, how it was going to be received, like, beyond that, right? You get one shot at this, and if it works, we're set for a $25 billion franchise, which is what we got. And it worked, obviously, pretty good. Nominated for 3 Oscars, 1-0. Harry Potter did not do particularly well at the Oscars. I think it was nominated for a total of, like, 6 or 7 Oscars. Didn't win any of them over the time. But this one was nominated for the best score, John Williams. Costume design and set decoration. So I don't know, Michaela, pretty good start here for the crew. Yeah, at the Harry Potter.
Absolutely. Now, we're not going to be able to do justice to all the ins and outs. We would be here longer than the film actually was. And the film was a long film. It was a 2.5 hour film. So just bear with us. We're going to talk about kind of the basics of what happened. There's a lot of detail that goes into these stories. And I think that that's one of the things that makes it so great. And the film, not knowing where it was going, the film does a really good job of keeping all those details kind of intact for the films that are subsequent to this. And I think that is, I don't know if that was half luck or just a stroke of pure genius on the producer and the director's part and the writer's part. I don't know, but it's definitely something to discuss for the ages, because like you said, Brian, only like 3 or 4 of the books had been written at this point, and it was we had no idea the fire that would be created from this. But we meet Harry. That's how the books or the movie begins, kind of on a dark night. A baby is delivered on Privet Drive to these very unhappy angry people that don't like the baby. That's Harry Potter. He lives under the stairs. He's basically a servant to his aunt and uncle and his horrible cousin, who is spoiled rotten. And it's his 11th birthday.
Right,
I'm going real fast through the first 20 minutes of this movie, but it's his birthday. And he gets some really strange mail. I gotta say, this would have been my notice that something like a warning sign that something is not quite right. I mean, I know that his aunt and uncle were horrible people, but that's right. When eagles and birds of prey are like owls are delivering mail owls, to your house.
Eagles. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's like a billion owls outside. I am particularly scared of owls because an owl could mess you up. If an owl flies into your face, they've got long talons, they have big beaks, they look mean, they can swivel their head like 360 degrees around. Steer clear of owls, kids. That's my message to you. But yeah, Petunia and Vernon Dursley, they don't like Harry Potter. Treat him as like a, you know, sort of a kid to do their bidding, really like their own kid who is a jerk. And, you know, we're going to see them get the one up. But yeah, we got Harry there. It's his 11th birthday, keeps trying to get mail. It's coming from Hogwarts. His uncle Vernon keeps like burning the letters. They're like knocking down the door. They're going crazy, and they eventually like retreat to some kind of like island getaway. It looks like a place like straight out of like the I don't know, like the Stone Age. They're like in the circular room. There's like a weird like creepy door on there. Who comes busting in the door though is Hagrid, coming in to save the day, played by Robbie Coltrane, the late Robbie Coltrane. Just passed away very recently, which is a sad loss for, you know, everyone in the world, because Robbie Coltrane was great. But he gets there to basically to tell Harry that he is special. He has been invited to Hogwarts. You're a wizard, Harry, he says, and he sweeps him off, and he is on his way to go get all of his school supplies to go to Hogwarts. He says, see you later, aunt and uncle, Petunia and Vernon. You stay here with your annoying kid. I'm gonna go get my wand, get my owl, get all my stuff, and that's where they go.
That's where they go. And this is really where the adventure really begins. And I'm not surprised that this was nominated for art direction. The set design is amazing. They really do a great job of setting up Diagon Alley and all of the shops and stores that don't exist to the regular world. It's called the Muggle world. Again, spoilers, if you don't know what we're talking about, joke's on you. This movie's been out for, I don't know, a million years. But the wand, Ollivander's wand shop is one of my favorite scenes with Ben Hurt. He plays Ollivander and lets Harry, you know, kind of the wands choose each other. And so they try a few different wands. That's really comedic. Funny, and then it's very dark because there's, you know, only one other person that had a wand that was made of the exact same kind of fiber material as the wand that ends up picking Harry, and it's kind of dark and ominous, and we don't really know why. And everybody in Hogwarts, or everybody on Diagon Alley that sees Harry, is shocked at who he is and wants to shake his hand, and he's really kind of bewildered by all this. He doesn't understand. They all want to see his, there's this scar on the top of his head that looks like a lightning bolt, and he's like, yeah, I got that, and I was a baby, I don't remember anything about it. And everyone's treating him so weird, and he's like, this is strange. But Hagrid's trying to help him get all ready for school. You know, he can't be there to actually see him off and get in the train. But that's okay, because that's when we meet what his soon to be best friend of all time, Ron Weasley, played by the amazing Rupert Grint. There's a whole family of redheads, and they all are trying to get on this platform. This platform doesn't exist in the real world. It's 9 3/4. And it's so genius. Like, the way to get there is to like run through a brick wall.
Which seems like a detail they should maybe put on the invitation to Hogwarts, because how would you know that? If the Weasleys weren't there, Harry wouldn't have known that. Hagrid didn't give the heads up on that. But I really like the section here as we're going through Diagon Alley. You go to Gringotts, to the bank, because Harry's like, I can't afford all this stuff. Hagrid, did you see me with the Dursleys? No cash there. They weren't giving me any money to go to school. So they go. Harry apparently has some vast fortune. I'm not 100% sure where that came from, but he has a lot of money and this bank, so he's able to buy his wand, he's able to buy his owl, he's able to buy, I don't know, his school books and his wizard robe and you know, all that stuff that he needs to go there. So yeah, we meet Ron Weasley there. The Weasleys are on the platform. They say, you know, just run on through this thing, and that's what you do. And you get on the Hogwarts Express, which is the most magical train this side of the Polar Express for sure. So you get on that, you are on your way to Hogwarts, you're hanging out, eating all the candy, because you know, you're Harry Potter. You just found out that you have a boatload of money. What are you going to do? You're going to blow it on candy with your new best friend Ron.
Gonna blow it all on snacks like chocolate jumping frogs
and... that's what every 11-year-old in the whole world would do. That is 100% accurate. It's what we would do too, Michaela.
I mean,
we would find the bar cart and say, we'll have those, please. Thank
we'll
you.
Have all of the, do they have a jumping French 75? Do they have any of those? Yeah, no, that's totally what we would do. And, but we meet another amazing character on the train. It's the very first time meeting the wonderful Hermione Granger. Hermione is very smart. She's trying to help. Somebody has lost a toad or something, and she's going in from car to car asking. And Ron sees her. They talk a little bit. You know, Ron's trying to, I don't know, turn his rat yellow, I think. And she's like, oh, that's a really complex spell. But she's, you know, showing off a little bit because she is really smart and she's already mastered a couple of spells. But she's a nice person. She fixed Harry's glasses. Harry's had glasses that have been broken for since God knows when, because his family doesn't help him with anything. And so, you know, they've become fast friends. She's telling them they've got to change their clothes and get into their Hogwarts robes to get on this, on these boats that they take across this mystical lake, so that they can get into the castle. The castle of Hogwarts is one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. It's so great. It's got a staircase inside that moves. I mean, it's got the Great Hall has like candles hanging from the ceiling.
It's got people that are alive in the paintings, but yeah, you mentioned these boats that they're coming in to Hogwarts on like the backside of Hogwarts Castle. The shot looks great. It came out in 2001, so you know, CGI effects, you know, kind of were what they were. Some of them were really good, some of them were less good. But this looks awesome. You have these boats kind of going up on this calm water, and it pans up and you see, you know, the big huge Hogwarts castle school thing there, kind of setting up perched on top of this stony mountain kind of thing, and it looks awesome. And yeah, they get to school, they are going to be going to their classes, they're going to be meeting some new friends, some new enemies, some frenemies. You know, we're meeting all sorts of people. You know, when you first get to school, and you know, all the whispers from Diagon Alley are, you know, they're running through these kids too. They're like, Harry Potter, that's that kid that's famous, right? So maybe we need to get him onto our side. And that is what our main kind of, he's not really an antagonist, you know, yet, but he wants Harry, you know, don't hang out with Ron Weasley. The Weasleys, they're no good. They're no good wizards. Yeah. But you know who is good wizards? That is
the Malfoys.
The Malfoys. That's
By
right.
Good, you mean evil and very, very blonde.
And very, very blonde. Yeah, that's right. He tells them, you know, come join us. We will help you to be the wizard that you are meant to be. Kind of creepy, but you know, Harry says, no, Malfoy, out of here. I'm hanging with Ron. He's my bestie. We've got Hermione here, even though she is kind of a square. We're going to give her a hard time. You know, she's going to be my friend too. So you get out of here. So meeting some of the kids there, that's pretty great. Hagrid is there. That's exciting. Reunited with Hagrid, and we're meeting some more of the school staff, right? Led by, of course, the headmaster, Albus Dumbledore.
Albus Dumbledore. And he is played by the amazing late great Richard Harris. At least in this film, he is. And we meet Professor McGonagall, played by Maggie Smith. And of course, the very melancholy, very grumpy, perhaps evil Severus Snape, played by the amazing and late Alan Rickman. And we meet, so we kind of start to get to know kind of the, these main players. There's a couple of things that happen right when Harry starts school. He's quickly becoming, you know, closer with Ron, and they make fun of Hermione a lot because she is very smart, and she's kind of a know-it-all, and she really follows the rules, and they try and get in trouble. But, you know, he Harry gets picked to be a seeker for the game Quidditch. We're not going to be able to tell you all the rules with that, but it's basically like a game where you fly on a broom. It's very cool looking. He's very young. He's like one of the youngest students to be picked to get on a Quidditch team. There's a really amazing scene that I love where they're playing the actual game, and he's flying around the entire kind of countryside looking for this little gold ball with wings called a snitch. They win the game, and that's really cool. Draco Malfoy, he's the, you know, bully student. And he really doesn't like the Weasleys because he thinks he's better than them because they don't have a lot of money. And there's like a ton of the Weasleys have a very big family and they don't have a lot of money. And it's, you can already start to see kind of some themes around classism and sort of like socioeconomic trends or feelings within the school, where there are some people that think that, you know, in order to be kind of on the right side, you have to be a full like a full-blooded wizard. Both, you know, your parents have to be wizards, your grandparents have to be wizards. It helps if you're rich, it helps, you know. And then there's folks that aren't like that, right? I mean, Harry's parents were both wizards, but Hermione's aren't. They are what they call muggles, and she, you know, so she's just trying to figure things out, and you see them really kind of bind together over the course of a couple of things that happen. A mountain troll comes in. There's a whole mountain troll scene.
There is a whole mountain troll scene. Yeah, you mentioned, you know, kind of this caste system at the school, and you know, the students are separated into kind of four groups of kids. That's going to be kind of your grouping of kids. That's who you're going to be going to classes with and doing, you know, competitions with, and, you know, rooming with, because, you know, you're here to stay at this school. So you get kind of that really great scene where they're at this big huge hall, which is absolutely beautiful. And this, you've got all these candles floating around, and that, but you have this hat. It's called the Sorting Hat. You put it on your head and it tells you which of these groups you're going to be in. Now, you could be a Ravenclaw. That one sounds pretty boring. You could be a Hufflepuff if you're one of the best and brightest and most perfect students around.
Very loyal.
Which is what I am, of course, very loyal. You could be a Slytherin, you know, if you are inclined to think like Malfoy there, that some students and some wizards are better than others. Or you could be a Gryffindor if you are honorable, if you are a champion. And that is exactly where Ron, Hermione, and Harry are going to end up. Team Gryffindor all the way. So yeah, you mentioned, you know, playing Quidditch. That's pretty awesome. I really like the scene where all the students are trying to like learn how to fly their broom, and Harry is very naturally good at it, of course, because he is the chosen one, you know, the boy that lived, you know, pretty good stuff there. So you get all that stuff. It looks pretty good. I think 2001 flying around the castle and stuff like that on the broom. That's pretty good. But you know, sometimes you're sneaking around. Hermione uses a spell to unlock a door. What do you do? You know, if you're Ron and Harry, you tease her. Maybe you go a little bit too far, and Hermione ends up getting her feelings hurt. Happens. That happens sometimes. You know, don't bully. You know,
your
listeners
friends
out there, don't bully your friends. Don't bully anyone. Bullying's bad. But I don't think they were really bullying her. They're just kind of teasing her. She took it, you know, and, you know, she got upset, which is reasonable. But she is in the bathroom, hiding out, trying to get herself together. And yeah, what comes in? Mountain troll. That's a bad time. But, you know, luckily, Ron and Harry realize the error of their ways. They feel bad about making her feel bad, which is good. You should do that. So going to find her. But what do you find? You find this mountain troll. And you get this really fun scene kind of where this mountain troll is trying to attack them. And, you know, these three kids are, you know, trying to figure out how to use the spells. They're like lost their wand. So Ron has to do it. And Ron is terrible at casting spells. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. Yeah, for a wizard, he's pretty awful. He's like, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know what I'm doing. Are you kidding? And Harry's like hung upside down. And he's like, do something, anything relating to anything. And of course, I do love, though, when they find, because Hermione is run off crying in the bathroom. And at first, Ron is like, oh, she's the worst. She's just making a big deal out of nothing. I was just teasing her. And then...
Quirrell.
Yes, and Queerness. Then Professor Quirrell comes in. Queerness Quirrell. He comes in. Now he is the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher. He's got this turban on. He's got these really long purple robes, and we think that he is kind of a giant scaredy cat because he runs in and he's shrieking about this troll, and he kind of falls and faints, and everybody starts running around. And of course, everybody else is like, okay, kids, everybody go back to the room. The teachers, you know, they're all like seasoned wizards. They got to go find this troll. Oh no, Ron and Harry, they got to go find their friend because they're worried that she's in the bathroom and she could get hurt. And of course, you know, they best this cave troll all by himself, all by themselves. And so Professor McGonagall is upset with them. Severus is like, that's very interesting. And they notice that Severus has like a wounded leg, and they think that maybe he's up to no good. When they were, when Harry was playing on the Quidditch field, it looked like maybe he was casting a spell on Harry's broom. And so they're not really sure what to make of him. He makes no bones about the fact that he doesn't seem to like Harry Potter very much, and we don't know why, but he's not very kind to him. He's the potions teacher, and Harry's not great at potions, but he likes potions. He really wants to excel in that, and he gets a lot of the brunt of kind of ire and snarkiness from Mr. Snape, and it's just, we don't know what's going on, but it's nothing good. Nothing good there. There's some bad blood there somewhere.
Something bad is going on. Yeah, like you said, he has kind of this cut on his leg. And, you know, the kids all see that. And Harry thinks to himself, because Harry's a bright, bright young lad, he says, I bet that he got that cut, that injury on his leg from that big three-headed dog named Fluffy, which is a very nice name for a three-headed dog. And that dog is there to protect the Sorcerer's Stone, the Philosopher's Stone, right? That's what that dog is there for. He says Snape probably was trying to go get that so he could give it to Voldemort, he who shall not be named. You know, nothing good is coming of Severus Snape. So
that's right.
So what are we going to do? We have to get there before Snape does, because if not, and Voldemort gets the stone, that's going to be bad. That's going to be bad for the whole world. It's going to be bad for me. He already tried to kill me once. I got to get there before him. That'll be bad. They're kind of on their way. You get some kind of fun stuff. They go out and they meet Hagrid, like in the Forbidden Forest. He's there looking for like a unicorn that's there. Some pretty cool stuff. But you know, they kind of end up in this place where Fluffy was guarding. They're able to use kind of their combined skills that they learned their first year of school. Hermione is doing some spells. Harry is flying around on his broom trying to get this key. And then probably one of my favorites, one of the more you know, when you think about Sorcerer's Stone, Philosopher's Stone movie, you think of a couple of things. And one of the things I always think of is Ron playing chess on this big, like life-size chessboard. That's pretty scary. That would be scary to put your life on the line to play some chess, to help your friend get a stone that you don't know anything about. But Ron does it because Ron is a good friend.
Yeah, he is a good friend, and he's actually really good at chess. Which is, they have some scenes at the beginning where they foreshadow that he's actually played some chess, so it's not like all of a sudden he learns how. Which I like that they've weaved that in. He's actually pretty good at chess, and he knows that if he gets taken out, if you get captured in this chess game, you actually kind of get killed, because it's like this real life chess where the if the queen's taking you out, she's taking a sword and like chopping up, you know, the knight in half or whatever. And so he does that. He gives up, he sacrifices himself so that they can keep playing, and gets hurt, but Harry's got to move on. He's got to, and he ends up in this really big hole with this mirror in the front of him. And he's seen this mirror before. We see it a little bit earlier in the show where it basically shows you what you want the most. So when he looks in it, Harry sees his parents. And quick note, we haven't talked about this. His parents, they died. He thought they died in a car accident for the first 11 years of his life. That's not true. They were both killed by this guy Voldemort, or in this movie he's called He Who Shall Not Be Named, or You Know Who, because they don't even want to say his name because he's so evil. And that's how he got a scar, and that's why everybody thinks he's amazing. And so he's sitting there staring at this mirror looking at his mom and dad, and he doesn't understand what is exactly happening. And then he sees Professor Quirrell, and he thinks Professor Quirrell is there to help. He's like, oh my gosh, you're here. Snape is right behind me. I'm sure of it. And turns out it wasn't Snape. Snape was good. Snape was trying to like help Harry, which makes no sense because he was so mean to him the entire film. But it's true. It was Professor Quirrell all the time. And the turban that Professor Quirrell wears actually holds the face of you know who, because I guess he's a mutant now. I don't really understand it. Do you understand it? But this is a very important part of the film, and it's terrifying. I still don't like it. It really gives me the heebie-jeebies every time I see it.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy looking, I have to say. Yeah, you think that Severus Snape is the bad guy, right? You think that he's casting the spell on Harry's broom. You think that he had the run-in with Fluffy. He's been mean to Harry this whole time. But yeah, as it turns out, Severus was he was casting a spell on Harry's broom, but that was to not let Harry fall and plummet to his death, because this jerk Quirrell was casting a spell on Harry's broom, but we don't look at him, so Quirrell's kind of operating behind the scenes here, because he has He Who Shall Not Be Named on the back of his head. I guess that's how he's trying to come back to life, right? There's some power in the Sorcerer's Stone. It's one of the things he needs to help bring him back to life. There's like these wizarding bits that he put his his essence into or something. So gonna have to get those back. And he's basically being incubated on the back of Professor Quirrell's head, and it's real creepy because he takes off like the turban, and he's like looking, and you see the reflection of him in the mirror. And you know, Harry's getting the rundown about, you know, how he killed his parents, and he's going to come back to life and kill you, because that's Voldemort's big regret in life, is that Harry Potter was the child that lived. It really rubbed him the wrong way that Harry got the best of him. But luckily, you know, Harry gets that. He was protected. His mom put a spell on him that is like the spell of love, so Voldemort wouldn't be able to get him. And that's going to protect him kind of long enough for this to come to a head. And lo and behold, Harry wakes up. The stone has been destroyed, says Dumbledore, so no one's able to use it for good or bad. It's better to, you know, if things can be used for bad, it's better to probably just go ahead and get rid of them, because people will always find them to do bad. But I digress. He wakes up, finds out that Ron and Hermione have been there to see him. They're doing fine. We find out that Neville gets some bonus points. Neville's another student we haven't talked about. Neville's awesome. But he stands up to Ron and Hermione and Harry and says, "You guys, stop acting a fool. You guys be good. You're getting the rest of us in trouble." He gets some points for standing up to him, which is good. You know, you should let your friends know if they're acting a fool, I guess. So good job on you there, Neville. And that kind of concludes the first school year, and Harry has found a place at Hogwarts. He's found some good mentors and Dumbledore and McGonagall. Maybe Snape. Probably not Snape. I don't know. Still kind of a jerk to him. But he's made some friends, and that's nice.
That is nice. It ends beautifully, and it's funny because it ends in May or June when the school year ends, but I feel like it's a very Christmassy kind of, the score is very happy and jolly at the end of it. It seems like everything, all is right, all is well again, all is well that ends well. And Harry is going to go back to the Dursleys. He's going back there for the summer, which sounds awful, but he's not actually all that upset about it because he's like, I'm just going to go visit there. But my home is really here at Hogwarts with all my friends and all of these new characters. And, you know, he's only in first year, right? He's got six more years of school to complete there at Hogwarts, which means we've got seven more films to watch.
That's right.
And it's the beginning of a very long, long epic.
A long epic journey. Yeah. he doesn't mind going home, right? He's only 11. You have to go home. Where are you going to stay? You don't have a house. You don't have a job. You're 11. But he knows he has some skills he learned to keep his cousin in line. He knows that his aunt and uncle probably aren't going to give him too much shtick because he is a wizard now. He knows that he's the chosen one. He knows that he has this vast fortune. Pretty good stuff there. So yeah, that is kind of where the first movie ends. You know, Michaela, we wanted to make it a point to not let kind of this conversation, and there's a ton of stuff we skimmed over here, because there's a lot going on, and like you said, this, you know, spawned on, you know, eight of these films. We wanted to really kind of keep it dialed in on this movie and not let, you know, kind of the conversation, you know, veer off as to what was going to happen. So Michaela, this movie was important. I don't know if it was on here, if we were just talking, but you know, this movie was set up as this ultra popular book series that's ongoing. It's coming out. The hype level, the excitement for it is through the roof. This first movie, a guaranteed blockbuster. It didn't matter if it was good or bad. It was going to make $1 billion. But if it was bad, then where do you go? But luckily for us in the world, it wasn't bad. It was great.
It wasn't bad. It was great. I mean, it came out. I remember it came out today. Actually, it came out on November 16th.
Okay.
This is early recorded, but this came out today, in 21 years ago. Wow, 21 years ago. And I remember when it did come out, I was one of the people who waited in line to see this film, and I was so excited. I had not read the books at that point, but I was really excited, and the world just opened. I've got to think that the wonder that happened when people watched this kind of compares to the wonder that people might have felt watching the first Star Wars film. And I wasn't alive when Star Wars was made. Maybe that's not the same. I don't know. But I think for young people, this has been their epic journey. And it's hard to compare the two, but this film made a boatload of money. The set direction's really good. The actors that they chose to play these parts, they did such a good job with that, because all of these actors managed to stay alive through most of the film. These young children, they managed to grow up, and they're still pretty successful actors in their own right. And so I feel like they did a good job not ruining their childhoods, but also really keeping them safe and having really, really special actors. And how they lucked out so much, I think, finding these young 10, 11 year old actors, and not just the three, but all of the folks who end up playing the students. They all kind of grow up in this film, and it's amazing. And not just this film, but the series itself. It's really amazing. And it all started with this film. Now it's a long movie. It's 152 minutes. But I feel like this is one of the times where it needed to be long in order to get all of the details. Like we've said, we've skimmed a lot. There's so much that if you rewatch it, you will see over and over again little details that were added that you might pick up, and that they somehow knew to keep in because we needed for other films that progress.
Yeah, it really needed to lay the groundwork for everything that was going to follow it, right? You know, I mentioned if it succeeded, it was going to be a success. But if it failed, it was going to kind of end. But you have to kind of hedge those bets, right? Like you can't, you know, these couldn't be one off things, because you have this window of time, and it's crazy to think about. Apparently, Chris Columbus, you can watch. I think it's on HBO. Is like the 20th year like reunion thing that Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson and Rupert didn't got together, and Chris Columbus was in there. Apparently he was very insistent with the child actors that they weren't going to be going out and doing a bunch of interviews. They were going to be largely shielded from this. And they made 8 of these over the course of 10 years, which is like a crazy workload. So basically you didn't have time to do anything else. You were just making movies like this whole time over a decade to tell this story because yeah, you know, kids grow up, people grow up and age out of being able to do things. You know, unfortunately, you know, we had, you know, Dumbledore, Richard Harris, you know, unfortunately, lost his life before, you know, kind of being able to complete through the series. So it's like this weird kind of window in time, you know, that existed for this decade where Harry Potter was so important and still is so important. And you kind of mentioned maybe kind of like a parallel to Star Wars, and I think that's fairly accurate. I mean, these kids are 11, right? So, you know, any kid that was, you know, 8 to 13, 14 probably could really kind of identify themselves with these, and that's kind of the neat thing. I know a lot of people. I know my brother is with his kids; they'll read like one of the Harry Potter books every year because you're literally aging, you know, with these characters, you know, year to year as they keep going back to school, which I think is really cool and kind of a fun kind of family thing that people are able to do. You know, you mentioned waiting in line. I don't remember when I saw this the first time. I didn't see it when it came out. To be honest, I never read the books. I was a little late coming to it. This came out the same year as Lord of the Rings, which was something I was way more into as a big fan of Tolkien and his work, The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings, stuff like that. So that was very much on my radar. This was less so on my radar. My wife read all the books. She read them more or less as they were coming out. So I think we probably did watch it around the time that it came out, but I couldn't, you know, testify that is exactly when I would have seen it the first time. But I know it's definitely taken up some residence and my life and the stories and the worlds that I like. And one of the worlds that I like is going with you and your family to Universal Studios. We've had the chance to do that a couple times, Michaela.
Yep. Yep. And it is really amazing. I love that they really try to recreate the space and talk about the art direction and the set direction. You know, I don't know who won that year for those things. But I
just told you that Lord of the Rings came out that year. So you can deduce.
Yeah, but that was the first one. That was the first one. Well, I guess the first one didn't win Best Picture. It was the third one that won Best Picture for all the previous. So it's probably that. You're probably right. But I do think that they don't have a Universal Studios for Lord of the Rings yet. If you want that, you have to go all the way to New Zealand and go and look at the Shire. And maybe that's next on our list. But I do think that the set direction is really amazing. And they had to do a really good job to give everybody that feeling of walking around and being at the Leaky Cauldron. And they have those two kind of different spaces where you can see Hogwarts as a castle and you can go into it. And while you're waiting in line, I think some of that is just amazing because it makes you feel like it's real. And it's just a really special fantasy land. And as an adult, yeah, it's really fun to get to just pretend that you're part of that world somehow. And I think every kid wants to be able to have superpowers. You know, superheroes are a really big thing, right? We talk about Marvel a lot. We talk about DC and all the superhero worlds that are out there. This is just kind of another one where instead of having the ability to fly, they have the ability to cast a spell that they can fly. So it's all part of that idea that you want to be something bigger and more than what you are. And the movie, I think, did a really good job of starting the foundation to get you into this world. There were some people that didn't like it, I'm sure. I don't know very many of them. I didn't read the books until way later. I probably was halfway through the series when I started to read the books. Mm-hmm. Wilby, if you're listening, I know you've read every book like 6 times, and I'm sorry, we probably missed a lot of things. But that's okay. Our hearts are in the right place. Because we can't be talking about it for 3 hours. But I don't have any any other closing thoughts on this. It's a really fun ride. And it's fine for kids. This one, I think, up until maybe the third or fourth, they start to the movies start to get a lot more dark. but no one dies in this. This is a very, other than the bad guy, and that's fine. We're okay with that. It's okay, I think, for kids, probably. My son's seen it, and he's 7. So it's a little dark, but not crazy. The first couple, I think, are okay, but it gets decidedly darker as as the kids get older and stuff gets real with the you know who.
Yeah, that's right. Use the ages of these kids as your barometer, I guess, for how much you're going to want to do. For posterity's sake, Lord of the Rings did not win our set direction. Moulin Rouge did. So there you go. Moulin Rouge took the top award there. But it's a great story. It is a tried and true hero's journey sort of tale, which is very easy to get into, especially kids, same kind of, you know, set up as Lord of the Rings, as Star Wars, which is why it resonates so well with people. So definitely really good, and I'm glad we finally got to talk about this one, and it is getting us kicked off into our holiday spirit, you know, as we're getting through the Thanksgiving holiday here in the United States and getting ready to go full-blown into hot cocoa and Christmas late season. And that's what we're going to be doing, Michaela, because we are into holiday movie month. Next week we're going to be coming back with Christmas classic, I don't know, Die Hard. A lot of people say that it is. You tell us what you think, and let us know what you think about Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's/Philosopher's Stone. Mix up a butterbeer. Let us know what you thought about those two recipes. Take pictures. Tag us. Do all that stuff. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. It's at DrinkTheMovies, and on Facebook.com/DrinkTheMovies. If you want to see pictures of ours, recipes, all that good stuff, you can do that on our website, which is www.DrinkTheMovies.com. And make sure to swing by our Discord server, chat with us about cocktails, about movies, about TV shows, about anything that you want to talk about. That is awesome. Definitely do that. The link is in the show description. And check out our Patreon if you want some extra fun bonus stuff. Patreon.com/DrinkTheMovies. Go check that out. Our first special episode came out about a week ago, so definitely take a look there if you're so interested. But we would appreciate anyone listening out there. If you like what you're hearing, Michaela, what should they be doing?
You should be looking us up, subscribing. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the places that Anchor podcasts are distributed. Leave us a 5-star review. Tell your friends. Share all the fun that is Drink the Movies with your social media followers. We are really just knocked out by the community that we are continuing to build. People who love cocktails, love films, love talking about all those things. We have a Discord site now. We have our Patreon. There's all the ways in which, if you want more Drink the Movies, we can give you all you want and probably more than you want if you do that. So that it helps us spread the love, the Drink the Movies love, and we really appreciate it.
All right. Well, with that, Michaela, our school year at Hogwarts is over. Hopefully you mastered potions. I mastered the dark arts of butterbeer making. So we're going to grab our butterbeers. We're going to head on the Hogwarts Express, and we're going to have to get these drinks, finished off, because we're back, like I said, to talk about Die Hard next week. So we're going to do that, and we will talk to everyone next time on
Drink
the movies. You're a wizard, Harry.
It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.